HOAs here on 850 WFTL, Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here again today, as we are each Sunday at noon with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro's back from Glazer & Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we're here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions, so give us a call right here in our studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you may do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking on the Email the Show tab.
And even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows. You can sign up for our free seminars. And again, that schedule is out. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. You can see who the show's sponsors are, and they're starting to line up, quite frankly, and visit all of their websites. You can link to our Facebook page. You can also automatically link to our brand new HOA and condo blog at hoa-condoblog.com. Again, that's hoa-condoblog.com. Tomorrow's blog tries to poke fun at the election process and asks, who would make a better president in your condo, Obama or Romney? Should be fun. You can also join our email list and get copies of our newsletters and other announcements about the show. And, of course, if you want to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 855 the number 4 Condo Craze. Again, that's 855 the number 4 Condo Craze. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, that's condo-laws.com. And like I said, let's just get some housekeeping out of the way. Like always, really, we're getting a great response already from people who are registering for the board certification seminars throughout the state. Remember, they're free. Remember, Florida law now provides that members of a condo board, you have to get certified within 90 days of getting elected to the board. And, in fact, you can even get certified 1 year before getting elected to the board. And one way of getting certified is by taking the Condo Craze Board Member Certification Course. This is the first course that was written by an attorney, yours truly, and that was approved by the Florida DBPR.
And Eric now has certified nearly 3,000 Floridians who are now eligible to serve on a Florida Condominium Board of Directors. And, of course, it is fun. The course is free. There is food served. You get to ask questions, and you leave with a summary of everything you learned and a really nice frameable certificate.
Yeah, and you know, even though it's 200 degrees outside today, summer is almost over, and before you know it, election season will be in full swing. So come learn about your duties as board members, learn about budgets, reserves, financial reporting, board meeting procedures, and so much more. We even added some information this year about making material alterations, competitive bidding for contracts, and stuff on emotional support animals. So if your board is interested in actually getting certified at your condo or even at our law office, you can give Glazer & Associates a call at 855-4-CONDO-CRAZE, and we can make arrangements to bring the course to you.
Absolutely. In fact, Scott, our next seminar is at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, November 8th, coming up again, November 8th at 6 p.m., Then on December 1st at 10 a.m., we're going to be back at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in Naples, Florida. I was just there last weekend.
Beautiful.
That place is gorgeous. Yeah, really, really nice. And on December 15th, we'll be in Orlando at the Holiday Inn at Universal Studios. So if you want to register for any of our seminars, just go to our website, condocrazeandhoas.com, and fill out the form. On that note, Karen, how about we go to Harold in North Miami?
Sure.
How are you, Harold?
Fine. I have a question. First of all, we all enjoy your show. It's great. Very informative.
Thank you very much.
Okay. The reason why I'm calling is our board is trying to push through a major change in our building, our common areas. Our docs specifically read, any addition or major alteration in the common areas require a 66 2/3 vote of the unit owners. They're claiming they don't have to do that because a year before, they tried the same thing, and they did not achieve the 66 2/3 vote. But they said they had a slight majority in the vote, but they didn't achieve the 66 2/3. Maybe 51% of the unit owners said okay for the change. So they're trying to push it through now based upon the fact that there was a vote the year before. And even though our docs reads no.
Sounds like a losing argument, Scott. What
yeah,
do you think?
I mean, because they didn't get it the last time they tried, they don't have to do it anymore.
I don't know what kind of argument that is.
Yeah.
But here's the bottom line. You didn't really tell us what the nature of the changes are to the common areas. But basically, you know, it has to be considered a material change. If it's a material change, which basically could mean even if it makes the property look different, to palpably change it.
What was that word again?
Yeah, palpably. That's what actual case says.
You mean palpably?
Palpably, whatever it is. Then I would have started with a P. But if it changes the common areas, the function of them, or even the appearance about them, then yes, it's going to require that vote. Now, the exception to the rule is if it's done for repair purposes. For example, let's say you have a wooden floor or a carpeted floor next to a pool area, and because the people leave the pool and they wind up getting the carpet wet time and time again, causing the board to continuously have to replace the carpeting, the board can say, wait a minute, doesn't make sense to keep putting back carpeting. We're going to now put back a ceramic tile floor so it'll last forever. That type of material change wouldn't require a vote. But basically anything else where you're just changing the appearance of the room or even the function of the room, that's going to require the vote. I don't care what happened last year and the fact that they only got a majority. They need to start over and do it all over again. But, Harold, give us a call tomorrow at the office so I can find out more specifics about what the changes are that they want to make.
One more quick question.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay. They already sent out the assessment notices, and we have until the 12th of this month to make the first payment. Can we take our money and put it in an escrow account?
No, that's
notify them that we have placed it in an account with the account number and everything else, or do we still have to pay this money and mark on the check paid on the protest or something like that? And I mean, we don't want to get hit with the lawyer's letters.
Great question. Here's what you need to do. Because you've quite frankly waited to the last minute. You said this goes into effect on the 12th. It's tomorrow's the 10th already. You probably want to give us a call tomorrow at the office again. 855 the number 4 Condo Craze. And again, if a bunch of you are interested, we can send out a letter on your behalf to your association saying you may want to rethink the special assessment and the changes to the making material changes to the common elements without a vote. Why? Because believe it or not, arbitrators enter orders out there that say, even though, let's say, you painted the building from white to blue, the arbitrator will make you paint it back, and the association spent all that money on a paint job for nothing. Could wind up costing the association thousands and thousands of dollars if they don't get the vote, and the arbitrator will make you put it back to the condition that it was originally in. So again, give us a call tomorrow, 855 the number 4 Condo Craze. Harold, thank you so much for that call. How about we go to Sharon in Boca?
Hi, hello, Sharon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
In my condominium, there's been a few units that have been that have gotten damage from cracks in the walls, you know, interior damage, and one of the condo minute meetings stated that for one other unit, the insurance wouldn't pay because it was a condo fault. If somebody wants to fight in court with the condo association, do they have to file a claim with their insurance company? Because, you know, there's a chance of being dropped if you
have absolutely
a claim.
Not.
And
yeah, oftentimes people are reluctant to file a claim, as a matter of fact, with their own carrier for fear that if they do, their rates are going to go up. But again, the problem always in suing your condominium association for damages to the interior of your unit is proving that those damages happened as a result of some negligence on behalf of the condo association. So if, like, let's say walls get wet in your unit or there's, you know, cracking in your paint, it's going to be incumbent upon the unit owner to prove negligence on the association by showing that the building wasn't properly waterproofed, that they didn't properly maintain the property to avoid that water intrusion. And oftentimes that's hard to do, especially if you don't have an expert witness on your side. So that's why we stress repeatedly on the show for unit owners to really seriously think about getting what's called an HO6 policy, which covers the interior of your unit in even your personal property. Okay.
And what's the risk of how likely is it that Well, okay, let me see if I understand. So in other words, you're saying it's not imperative to file with your insurance carrier because you might have a risk of being dropped. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. It's absolutely not imperative to file with your carrier before proceeding in an action against your association in a court of law. That's correct.
In other words, an opposing party can't use that as a counterattack.
Absolutely not. It's your business if you have insurance.
Okay, thanks. Oh, I thought it was required by the Condo
Act
to have insurance.
No, it's not. Okay, that's a good question. We teach that at the course all the time. About 2 years ago, the law actually did say that you're required to have these policies, and if you don't, the condo could force place that insurance, and that turned out to be a disaster, and that was repealed by the Florida legislature. So at one time, Sharon, you were right, but just not any longer. Okay?
Repealed.
Thanks for the phone call, Sharon. Let's go to James in Coral Ridge. How are you, James?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. I have a CAN license. I live at Coral Ridge. I requested our management company's license or his license number, and he's refused to give it to me. Now, I understand I can find this online. He knows I want to file a complaint against him, so he's just making it difficult. What's your opinion on whether he's required to show me his license or not?
Well, that's what he thinks, Scott. I mean, the bottom line is under the Florida condominium statute, I don't believe there's anything that would require him, that manager, to provide their license number. It's certainly not an official record of the condominium association.
No, it's not listed in the statute, but there's nothing stopping from any member of the public from going to the DBPR's website and looking up the guy's name and seeing if he's licensed.
Right, exactly, which obviously when we represent an association and we're asked to review a contract with a proposed manager or management company, we make sure to do just that. Just go online, make sure the person is in fact licensed. And by the way, there's a lot of people that don't know this. A management company not only has to have the person that's doing the work at your condominium licensed, but the company itself now needs to be licensed as well. There actually needs to be two separate licenses, okay? So I wouldn't only research this one person that's serving at your association. I'd research, if he's working for a company, I'd research that company's licensure as well. All right, James?
Yeah, if we had a lawn maintenance company and I requested to see their license, I'm sure they'd show it to me.
Hey, I'm not,
I feel like our management company is a vendor to us.
Well, the fact of the matter, James, is
just give it up.
The fact of the matter is, law firms and lawyers are much more heavily regulated than property managers here in Florida, and we have to require abide by certain requirements that other professionals do not have to. And unfortunately, this guy just doesn't have to show it to you. But the website to go to is very easy and it's free and very quick.
Yeah, but I agree with James. James, I do agree that if a guy has nothing to hide, of course, give up the license. Mm. Absolutely. That information should be flowing freely and provided to the unit owners without any hassle whatsoever. But let's do this. Let's take our first break. The phones are obviously ringing off the hook. And when we get back, we're going to hear from our blog readers about what they think when associations literally break into homes and rent them out. We'll discuss the fact that the recent uptick in the condo market may have little to do with Americans buying condos, and instead the credit belongs to foreign investments in Florida. We'll talk about the fact that there's nothing in the law that requires condo meetings or HOA meetings to be conducted in English, and the question is, should there be? And of course, we'll take your calls on anything and everything else condo or HOA related at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Here on Big Talk 850, I'm Karen Curtis, and I'm here with Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates PA. That's the law firm practicing community association law in Florida. We would love to get you on the phone. Give us a call, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations, be listed on the show's website, and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email. But first, we want to go to Elise from Deerfield Beach, who's been on the line. Thanks for holding, Elise.
How are you, Elise?
Oh, yeah, hi. I'm glad to answer. Well, I haven't heard my unit.
Wait, Elise, we can hardly hear you. You're going to have to call back from a landline, okay?
Your phone is bad.
Yeah, your phone is bad. Sorry about that. Okay, let's let Elise call back.
Yeah, last week we had lots of special guests who helped us get through Tropical Storm Isaac. We had Joanne Willoughby from Associa Property Management, Michelle Valentino from Condominium Concepts Management, and Paul Mack, again, he was on the show, from Mack and Waltz Insurance Agency. And we heard lots of great tips about keeping your property safe both during and after a storm and ways to properly document your insurance claims to make sure you get all the money you deserve under the terms of your policy.
Yeah, and one point I want to remind everybody about is the fact that we discussed all the things that are not covered, again, not covered by the association's master policy should a storm hit. And I just want to recap that again for a moment. Again, the following items are not covered should a storm hit, and the owners have to go out and get their own policies called HO6 policies if they want coverage for these items. Scott, walk us through what's actually not covered again under the condo's policy.
Well, the association's coverage excludes all personal property within the unit or limited common elements, you know, and floor, wall, and ceiling coverings, electrical fixtures, appliances, water heaters, water filters, built-in cabinets and countertops, and window treatments, including curtains, drapes, blinds, hardware, and similar window treatment components, or replacements of any of the foregoing which are located within the boundaries of the unit and serve only such units. Such property and any insurance thereupon is the responsibility of the unit owner. It's basically all your stuff.
Right. All your stuff is not covered, exactly.
Right. Now, Randy Hoffman of Allstate has been a longtime sponsor of the show, and I understand that Randy can get you those HO6 policies that many of our listeners may need, and they're not expensive at all.
Yeah, they're really not.
Give Randy Hoffman a call, and here's his number. Get a pencil. 954-846-1206. Right. 954-846-1206.
And while we're on the topic of our sponsors, let's thank two new sponsors to the show, Associa Property Management and Alpha Security. And to find out about each of these sponsors and all of our other sponsors, please visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and click on the View Our Sponsors link. Quite frankly, everybody, all our sponsors make the show possible week in and week out, and we really appreciate what they do for us. But think about this. You know, Isaac, that was 2 weeks ago, that certainly wasn't a powerful storm here in South Florida, but Citizens Insurance is reporting that about 2,000 claims were actually filed in mostly Broward and Palm Beach counties. And to make matters worse, an appeals court here in Dade County ruled last month that if you want to sue Citizens Insurance for failing to pay you what you're owed under your claim, you have to now file suit in Tallahassee.
Oh, geez.
Can't bring suit down the block here in Broward or in Dade or Palm Beach. And that's a big blow to the policyholders around the state, and it may, in fact, prevent lots of litigation from being filed. And by the way, this comes at the same time that reports are emerging showing that the executives at Citizens Insurance are living large off everybody's premiums. They're taking international trips. They're staying at $600 per night hotels and are engaging in $100 per person dinners.
Yeah, and what's funny is the fact that they're spending caps imposed on the rank and file employees, but executives, they dine at like all the fancy swanky restaurants and they spend repeatedly more than $50 per person on such fare as rack of venison, sea bass, and Dungeness crab.
And the reports also state that citizens spent tens of thousands of dollars on travel just in Florida, including trips to board meetings held in four-star hotels. Their chief financial officer broke company rules at least five times by using corporate credit cards to pay for alcoholic beverages and personal expenses.
Yeah, now apparently because of the lack of storms that have hit Florida over the last several years, is a staggering figure, but Citizens has actually built up a $6.2 billion reserve fund. You know, you can buy a lot of steak and lobster with that money and stay in some great hotels, but, I mean, really, with $6.2 billion in the bank, What do you think? These guys should be staying at a Motel 6 when they go away?
Well,
come on.
I mean, you know, there are a lot of nice hotels out there and motels that can give them accommodations. I don't know if there's any Motel 6s in Europe, but, you know, maybe they got their equivalents of Comfort Inns or Howard Johnson's or something in wherever these people are going.
Right, but I understand that after getting their hands caught in the proverbial cookie jar, Citizens has kind of done an about-face in terms of trying to take away credits from people who were getting those credits because they installed shutters or roof tie-downs.
Yeah, well, not quite an about-face, but as our listeners know, Citizens is really on an aggressive campaign to re-inspect everybody's home and condo, actually, now, to make sure that they're not getting these mitigation credits unless they can, again, prove that they're entitled to them. And already it's being reported that hundreds of thousands of people have seen their rates go up as a result of these re-inspections. But on Friday, just 2 days ago, they kind of changed their plans a little bit. And now homeowners who don't agree with the findings of an inspector, they have a year to request a second inspection free of charge. And homeowners who lost insurance because the inspector couldn't get into their attic, they can also get a new inspection. We'll follow up on this when we get back from the bottom of the hour break. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro. We're taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585.
All right. Before we went to the break, we were talking about Citizens Insurance Company taking some votes on Friday. One of the votes was that they allowed to give people a second shot at the apple, second bite at the apple, I should say, if they had their insurance rates go up as a result of those re-inspections. Now you can request a second inspection within a one-year period. But that's not all they voted upon, Scott, did they?
No, that's not all they voted on. You may not believe this, but they also voted to offer low-interest loans to private insurers. What's that? Well, yeah. Under this new surplus note, program Citizens would take your money that it has built up in its reserve and lend it out at favorable rates to private insurers who agree to take over policies and keep them for at least 10 years.
Yeah. Now, believe it or not, these will be 20-year loans that require interest only during the first few years and are forgivable if a hurricane hits the state. And Citizens even admits that they're taking the surplus money and loaning them out to other insurance companies. They admit that the loans even stand a chance of never being repaid.
I want one of those loans.
Yeah, really?
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Citizens is going to take all the premiums they've collected from hardworking Floridians over the years and lend the money to other insurance companies, knowing that they may never get that money back?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Does that money belong to the hundreds? Doesn't it belong to the hundreds of thousands of Floridians who've been paying their premiums?
You would think that that's everybody's money, and yes, it should go back to them, or it should be used to offset future rate increases. But no, it's actually being lent out to other insurance companies. And we've had the honor of having Senator Mike Fasano from Newport Richey on the show before. And he was quoted the other day at this hearing as saying, "I sat here and I listened to the board today give out one of the biggest bailouts, corporate welfare, I call it, and he blasted Citizens' plans because they didn't even bother to wait for any legislative input on this issue." And by the way, the board of directors approved it with a unanimous vote.
Free money for everybody.
Yeah, insane. But how about on that note, we go to Mike from Pembroke Pines. How are you, Mike?
Hi. Hello.
Yes, you're on the air, Mike.
Yeah. Hey, I've got a question. I live in a community here. We have a homeowners association, and we have a management company that we've hired. But my question is, our board, we have a four-member board, a secretary, a treasurer, a president, vice president. But my question is, our treasurer owns quite a few properties out here. And how many... is he entitled to more than one vote
as a homeowner for each property?
Yeah, good question. This comes up all the time, and the answer is yes, absolutely, unequivocally. If you own more than one unit, more than one home, you get more than one vote. That's right. And if he owned more than 50%, he probably gets to automatically control what happens in the community, period. So, yes, that's right. He does get more than one vote. In a condo, you own more than one unit, you get more than one vote. Works the same way in an HOA. Okay.
Oh, okay. So he pretty much, once he gets over 50%, he can pretty much do whatever.
Pretty much. It's your own little kingdom once you get to that point. Okay?
Yeah, well, he's working on it. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Mike. All right. Taking your calls, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. All right. A few weeks ago, we wrote a blog about the fact that many associations, sometimes on their own and sometimes even with the help of the court, wind up breaking into homes that they believe to be abandoned. They fix them up, sometimes spending even thousands of dollars, and then they rent the unit out to whoever the association wants to rent it to. And to be clear, when the association does this, it clearly is not the owner. The unit is still owned by the unit owner.
Yeah, people, it's really simple, all right? You know, there's a lot of complex things in real estate and condominium law and all that, but everybody knows your name needs to be on the deed for you to own the property.
And break into it, right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Until then, you can't do that. But as I said in the blog, this is breaking and entering into someone's home. It's a felony. It's illegal. There's nothing in the law that would allow for this, but I keep seeing receivers put these orders in front of judges here in South Florida that gives these receivers the right to do this. And with all due respect to the courts, there really is no basis in the Florida statutes for entry of such an order.
Now, I saw your concern that suppose, for the moment, that the association was incorrect in assuming the unit was abandoned, and the true owner returns to the unit, puts the key in the lock, turns the knob, and sees that someone else is walking around his or her unit.
Yeah, you can imagine that this can definitely happen, and certainly that situation can result really in a tragedy where both parties think the other is breaking into their unit. And on the Florida Stand Your Ground law,
right?
And Castle Doctrine, it would seem to me that each may be justified in even using deadly force against the other. And it's scary to say the least, and the courts really need to be careful about this.
Yeah. To avoid confusion, the association can still collect the rent from the tenant of a delinquent unit owner after the proper statutory notice has been given. What we're talking about here is directed to the specific situation where there is no tenant, and the association seeks to put their own tenant into a unit without the consent of the person or the business or whatever that actually owns the unit.
Exactly. Hey, if you own the unit, of course, rent it out. You don't own the unit yet. Association, stay out. And let's see what our readers of the blog had to say. Mitch Drimmer writes in and says, there are times when you and I don't see eye to eye on some issues, but you're spot on here. I've been telling people that even with a court order in hand, drilling locks and renting out units is nothing short of breaking and entering. I've used the stand your ground analogy, albeit a little extreme, and I believe that this trend has got to stop. We still live in America, and even irresponsible people who are delinquent on the payments deserve due process when it comes to their property. Mitch, you hit the nail on the head.
Yes, and Greg Capra writes in and says, always good information, Eric. At Point Siena, the association is renting a unit to pay for arrears. However, the association foreclosed on the unit first. There is a mortgage on the property that the association is not paying. At some point, the bank will come knocking to get the property. Of course, they will get it, and they will have to pay the maintenance going forward. That's fine until the arrears are being paid down by the renter, which is on the second year.
Yeah, and exactly, Greg. That's the way to do it. If the association wants to rent out a delinquent unit, the association has to foreclose on it and get back title first. Now, Greg, I'm guessing you have some wonderful legal counsel over there in Sunny Isles Beach that's representing your association.
They really
sound like they know what they're doing over
Glazer
there.
Glazer and Associates.
Yeah, and you'd be right, Karen. Okay, M. Lee writes in and says, at our association, we foreclose on the delinquent unit, take possession, then rent it out until the bank comes for the unit. That is legal, correct? And yes, Mr. and Mrs. Lee, I can't tell. That's exactly what we're saying. Foreclose first, and then you're okay.
Yeah, this Patty here writes in and says that an association that proceeds in this manner without a court-sanctioned title transfer jeopardizes the entire association. Thank you for bringing these matters forward, Eric, so many associations trust their president and board to do the right thing. Participation is the answer. Without it, members are just gambling with their properties.
All right, and Janice writes in and says, there are now companies springing up that approach condos and HOAs to get them to sign over the title rights, promising to help the association get back their lost fees through rentals. On the other side, condo associations who become landlords by going through the legal system to obtain a writ of possession and title find there's usually so much work in cleaning and repairing that the association creates a deeper financial hole than when it started. It has to collect a minimum of 6 months' rent just to get back the cost for taking the property and getting it ready to rent. Sometimes the bank forecloses before the outlay of money has been recovered. This is a bad deal all the way around, and I have to tell you, this is a great post by Janice. Makes a lot of sense. You know the line, timing is everything? That's what Janice is talking about, because if the bank has already filed a foreclosure action and has already filed, let's say, their motion for summary judgment, Janice is right. It may be a bad idea for the association to try and finish its own foreclosure first and rent out the unit, because the association may only beat the bank by a month or two and won't be able to make their money back that the association laid out to get the foreclosure. So each case really has to be looked at first on its own merit, and there should never be a rush to judgment, literally. On that note, why don't we do this? We'll take our final break of the hour. Taking your calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Welcome back to the final segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on Big Talk 850. I'm Karen Curtis with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. The number to call to talk to us, ask us questions, 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585.
All right. As our listeners know, the Community Association Members Party was established to get legislation passed that would help all of you living in community associations throughout the state. To know exactly what legislation each of you believe should be the top priority, there's now a survey on that website that allows you to specifically tell us what legislation you guys deem to be the most important. So please visit www.camp2012.net and click on the survey button. And we intend on getting responses really from thousands of you around the state. And when that survey is completed, the results will be given to the Florida legislature. So again, go to www.camp2012.net and click on the survey button, and please participate in this important survey. We definitely need your help and your participation. All right, the Sun Sentinel had a real interesting article this week that made it clear that this alleged resurgence of the condo market here in South Florida really has little to do with Floridians or even Americans investing in new homes. And on the contrary, the recent condo boom is the result of lots of money coming from international buyers. Yeah, and according to...
how exotic.
Yes, according to Peter Zalewski, who is head of the Condo Vultures consulting firm, low prices and a weak dollar are bringing investors in from Canada, Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, and other countries directly to Florida. And in fact, the Sunshine State was the fastest growing real estate destination, with 26% of purchases in the past year being made by foreign nationals.
Yeah, Zalewski says that foreign nationals who are accustomed to buying with cash, cash is king, have been reading about the distressed condo market in South Florida for a number of years. Once they get off that plane in Miami or Fort Lauderdale, they tend to stay or buy in those areas. And many of them then rent the units using the income to defray costs.
Yeah, and as we said recently on the show, inventory is now allegedly scarce and developers are proposing thousands of more new condos, particularly in Miami-Dade and Broward, that are due to be built over the next few years. And One broker was quoted as saying that we shouldn't worry about another collapse in the market because this time buyers are being required to put down as much as 80%. Yeah, we shouldn't worry. And again, if you believe that, ladies and gentlemen, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you again.
Yeah, because only our economy can go into a recession.
Exactly.
Because those economies in South America, they never go into a recession.
On solid ground, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Greece, too. I understand Greece is very strong right now as well. But how about this? Now, this is kind of along those lines. You know, I see that there's a law firm here in South Florida that's teaching the board certification course in Spanish. Hmm. And I have to ask, should the course be taught in Spanish and not English? I'm curious to see what our listeners have to say.
Well, I mean, Eric, really, what's more important, the fact that people learn the law or the fact that they learn the law in English? I think it's just that they learn the law.
Well, I understand that argument, but the question is, where does it end? Do we teach the course in Creole in the condos in the Haitian community? Do we teach the course in French in the French-Canadian community?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I don't know.
All right. Spare me the outrage, everybody. These are not exactly public dollars going towards. This is a law firm deciding to do it themselves to get more clients.
Right, but should the people be learning this in English, considering the statutes are being written in English, the court opinions are in English, the arbitration decisions are in English, your bylaws are in English, your deck is in English, your articles are in English, and your rules are in English. So should they be taking the course in English? But I'll say this. One time, you know, I was at a condo meeting where the board, believe it or not, only conducted the meeting in French, and I thought it was wrong, and I still think it's wrong today. But I would guess many Floridians probably don't even know this, but even though they voted for it as a constitutional amendment back in the 80s, but according to the Constitution of the state of Florida, Section 9 states, and a lot of people, again, are going to be pretty surprised by this, the Florida Constitution specifically states English is the official language of the state of Florida. The legislature shall have the power to enforce this section by appropriate legislation. So there's no question that the legislature can pass a simple statute that says, you know, condo and HOA meetings shall be conducted in English. The question is, should they? I'm just throwing this out. Should they require it? And while I would agree that I want the directors to get educated about the law, again, the laws are written in English and so are all the governing documents, but I'd like to know what our listeners think about this topic. English only in your condos or HOAs? Let us know what you think. 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We're kind of running out of time. But I definitely want to talk about a topic that came up this week in our office, as a matter of fact. And those listeners who live in a 55 and over community, you guys need to listen up because, again, I actually worked on a very interesting situation for some friends of the family recently that I'm sure is common to many of you. A married couple who wants to move down from New York to Florida with their 35-year-old child, and they want to live in a 55 and over community with him. And you know, child may have some issues, and the child's going to be living with them in this condominium. And you know, as we know, as long as the condo unit is occupied by at least one person age 55 or older, there's no problem with this couple moving into the unit, even if the 35-year-old son is also going to be living there as well. But here's the potential problem. This couple is worried that if, God forbid, something happens to them and they pass away, let's say 10 years from now, their child is only going to be 45 years of age and therefore may have to leave the condominium. You know, would the child have to leave? And the question is, you know, are they correct? And here is the answer. Believe it or not, it depends upon what your governing documents in your condominium actually say. And I checked that first condominium that they were interested in, and there was no question about it. There was no exception for children that are under age 55 and inherit that unit from their parents. And then, you know, they were then interested in looking at a different condo. And I got to tell you, lucky for them, the documents of this second condo made it perfectly clear that children under age 55 who inherit the unit from their parents, they can continue to live there. As long as by doing so it doesn't make the community less than 80% occupied by someone 55 or older.
All right.
So you really got to read your documents. People that live in a 55-over community, you may or may not be able to have your child who survives you live in that unit when you go.
So the bottom line is, if you're thinking of moving into a 55 and over community with one of your children, you need to make sure that you read the docs beforehand so you'll know in advance if your child can continue to live in that unit should something happen
and
to you.
We should just make it clear. This only has to do with people living in the unit. Your children can still inherit the property and rent
right.
it out to someone that's over 55 if the docs allow rentals, of course. But, you know, everybody you know really needs to read their declaration of condominium before they buy it.
Right, exactly. It,
with respect to this and everything else.
Right. We're not talking about ownership. But in a 55 and over unit in a 55 and over community can be owned by anybody. The owner doesn't have to be 55. The question is the occupancy. It always boils down to occupancy, that at least one person must be 55 and over. So what happens if the parents die and leave a child who is under 55? Does that child have to stay? Can they stay in the unit or not, even though they may be living there for the last 10, 15 years? And the answer is yes. Your own child may be forced out of that association. It all depends on what your governing documents say. All right, off to a new football season. Fast
go
predictions. How many wins for the Dolphins, Scott?
Oh, boy.
Four-ish.
Oh,
four.
Geez.
Oh, okay.
That's it?
Well, the Jets will have 11 and wind
seven.
Up making the playoffs.
I'll say seven.
All right, everybody have a great week. Thanks for tuning in to another week of Condo Craze and HOAs. Same time, same channel next week here on Big Talk 850.